let's chat, of course, about Big Bash. We're not too far away before we get our teeth into the Big Bash season. And we're delighted to hear that the first Indian player has found his way to Australia. He's turned his back on international cricket for India and the IPL. To do so, he wanted to join the Melbourne Renegades. He's always eyed off the Big Bash. He's always been a fan of the Big Bash, and he's been kind enough to join us on Mornings. Unmukh Chand, we appreciate your time. I know you've been in Melbourne for some few days now, but a belated welcome. I hope you're enjoying your stay.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm really loving Melbourne. It's nice and sunny out there, and I'm really enjoying the vibe.
So why the Big Bash? It's a big decision to make, the first Indian player to do so, and I'm sure that wasn't a part of your thought processes, but why did you decide that it was time now to come to Australia and try your hand down here at the BBL?
Well, it's been a few months since I've shifted my base to the USA, and hopefully in the next few years when I get eligible to play for the US national team, that's the next step. But yes, one of the major reasons I also, left BCCI was the fact that I could play the leagues like Big Bash. And obviously, Big Bash is a pretty well-known league around the world and, one of the best leagues, you can say. And always wanted to, be a part of it, play good cricket with some great players from around the world. And I've always enjoyed playing in Australia. So, looking forward to the season.
You talk about there are the restrictions that the BCCI put on the players to go and play in other leagues. I mean, do you think that this could be the first of others and many others who not just, and you're still a young man, you're in your 20s, so you've still got a lot of cricket left in it. Did you feel restricted because of the handcuffs put on you by the BCCI?
Well, obviously, as a cricketer, you want to, explore your opportunities to play cricket around the world. And, nowadays, there's so many good leagues all over the world, like Big Bash, the CPL and so many others. And it's always nice as a cricketer to maximize the opportunities to play cricket, good cricket, to perform as well. And I think, yes, I mean, in the coming days, because obviously leagues is the future of cricket as well. And, in the coming times, there will be players who are not getting that many opportunities in their respective countries to, try out this option. So, I mean, as long as, cricket can grow and people can go to places and we can become better cricketers, I think it's a good step.
Have you spoken to any of your countrymen about, the fact is you haven't played in the Big Bash yet, but you've certainly come to Australia for 4 or 5 days to have that opportunity. Have you spoken to some of your teammates, either through the IPL and or the Indian system to sort of say, should they consider doing the same?
Well, honestly, since the time I announced my retirement from the BCCI, I've been getting lots of calls from not just the players, but the coaches, the administrators. All of them want to explore new opportunities, new fields. And I'm sure that with the interest I'm seeing from around the world especially in India, for players to go out and, play cricket, be in the leagues or wherever, I think it's really increasing. And I'm sure that in the next few years, in the coming times, you'll definitely have more players going out and exploring this option.
Yeah, no doubt. We'll look forward to that. I see overnight, we're going to talk more about your Renegades journey and a few other parts of the journey that's been. And Unmukh Chand is our guest here on Mornings. Glenn Maxwell, the only Aussie retained by the IPL team. Of course, each IPL franchise can retain just 4 players. You can have 2 internationals. He's the only Australian kept on the list. So that means no Dave Warner, no Hazelwood and the like. Are you surprised by that? And how big a name is Glenn Maxwell over there in India through the IPL?
Well, I think, Aussies have always had a great impact, especially when it comes to the IPL. And, we have seen that in every team, probably, they have been the change makers. And obviously, Maxi has a great fan following in India. He has done well over the years for various teams he has played for. And it's great too that, he has been retained, that the RCB has shown a lot of confidence in him. And I think it's great. I mean, he's one of, no doubt, he has been a great player. And, the way he's been playing for whichever team he plays for, I think it's great that he is retained. And I'm sure that obviously if not retained, many other Aussies will definitely be a part of the IPL in the next season. And do well as they always do.
Very much so. Ugmund, just going to ask you, just in regards to your team at the Melbourne Renegades, Sean Marsh is currently injured. He's still in Perth, of course. He's got a calf injury. We know that Aaron Finch is under a bit of an injury cloud after fresh winning the T20 World Cup. You've got a new Renegades captain in Nick Maddison. How has the pre-season been going? It really is an injury-riddled team at the moment, but how's the group going? And you've had a couple of hit-outs yourself.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not a very ideal start because we have some injury issues and some of the players will be not available because of the Australia A and the Ashes about to start as well. So that puts us in a bit of a this thing. But I think it's a great opportunity for all the younger players, for all the newer players to step up. And it's a great opportunity. You know, I always look at such times as opportunities where you can actually make an impact. And if you can start well with this, with a new squad, I think it's going to be great going on to the tournament. And I think it's never a smooth journey. And, having had to face it early on, I think it's going to really make us strong. And, character has to be shown in the initial games. And I'm pretty sure with this group, with this talented bunch of boys, I'm sure that, we're going to really step up and do well and fill those shoes, try and fill those shoes as much as we can. So the practice has been going well. We just finished our sort of a quarantine because we came in last week, so the international players were practicing separately with the rest of the crew. Yesterday was the first day where we all practiced together, and it was good. I mean, we played a practice match, and it was good to know the other blokes as well, having spent some time. And I'm sure that the bond is going to get stronger in the next few days, going into the tournament, and really looking forward to the 7th.
Yeah, no doubt. Unmuk Chand is our guest. Through the Indian system, of course, he's now out here playing for the Melbourne Renegades in the upcoming BBL season, just days away. We're just a week away from it all getting underway. You mentioned that you'd been in the States for a couple of months. I'm led to believe it's you could be eligible to play for the USA in 2024. Is that the plan? Is that the plan to play as a United States player in 3 or 4 years' time?
Yes. So according to the ICC rules, so it's around 30 months. So out of the 36 months, you got to be in the country. And so I think, I'll be eligible to play for the US in the 2024 World Cup.
So why? So what's your link? I saw you got married very recently. Yep. Congratulations on that. A very special time for you. I saw those beautiful photos
Thanks
that
so
you,
much.
You posted. That was a very special day mm-hmm. for you. So what's the connection yep. to the US for you?
I mean, when I left the BCCI, I went to the US only, and obviously, being in the States for some time, I realized that it's coming up really well, and they have a strong structure which is building on, and there's a Major League Cricket which is starting, which is going to start next year onwards, which is going to be big, just like the Big Bash and the IPL in India. US is going to have its own league, which is called the Major League Cricket. So that is underway, and they've been calling players from all over the world. We have had a good setup of players who have come in from all over the world, and most of us will get qualified by 2023-24. So you can really expect that good team is gonna form a very good team over there as well. And I mean, it's a very there's a lot of cricket in the US, but obviously there was no. Sort of a pathway to how to build on to the main team, but I think US in general is doing really well. We have a team which is right now playing the qualifiers for the 2023 World Cup, and with the additions of the international players also coming in and also joining the squad, I'm sure that the team is going to get really good. And recently, I think 2 weeks back, there was a news that 2024 World Cup is being hosted in West Indies as well as the US. So, I mean, that's a great start.
Yeah, no doubt. And you've also done some commentary in the Caribbean Premier League, and you're writing books. I mean, you've got it all covered. You've got all bases covered. You must be very excited about what's taking place in your journey so far. And coming to Australia is another part of the chapter.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Australia was the first country I ever toured in my life. And I was 13 years old with Bishan Singh Bedi. He brought a group of players together to New South Wales, and we had a 1 month. We played matches here and there, and then obviously the World Cup happened. Before the World Cup, there was a quadrangular series in Australia, where we won that series, and then the World Cup happened in Australia in 2012. We won the World Cup, and then 2015, I 14, I again came back to Darwin with the India A, and we won that series as well. So Australia has been very special to me, to be very honest, and it's great that after I've again come back to Australia, and somehow this you can say that this soil sort of suits me, and it's been great. I mean, yeah, having done commentary in the past, written the book, so I feel really good and really excited about this new chapter in my life, and it's something which I never thought that this would have ever happened, but life has its own ways of showing different things. I'm really glad that this happened, and really looking forward to this brand new chapter and this big opportunity.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to seeing you display your wares for the Melbourne Renegades in the Big Bash season. As far as idols was concerned, now you're going to say Sachin Tendulkar, Virat Kohli. Well, I understand all of that, and that's fine. Let's talk about Australian cricketers that you grew up loving and that you may have got to meet or know over the journey. Who are some of the Australian cricketers that were Ukmul Chahan's absolute idols as you were a young man growing up?
Well, so many. I mean, I always cherished watching Australia play, and obviously India-Australia battles have been very, very good and fantastic over the years, and I've been very lucky to have spent time with Ricky Ponting when he was part of the Mumbai Indians. He was coach for Mumbai Indians, and we won that season as well. And so he was my coach that year, and I really enjoyed spending time with him. In my first year with Delhi Daredevils, Finchie was there, and it's good to be reuniting with him. And Finchie was there, David Warner was there, and so many others. And it's great that I'm reuniting with them, and obviously. Seeing the journey over the years, David had just started off that time, Finch had just started off that time, and both having done so well for Australia in the last decade, I think it's a phenomenal thing. And I mean, I always enjoy the way the Aussies play the cricket, and this is something which I really look forward to here. And it's great to be again sort of reuniting with many of my teammates whom I've played with and whom I have played against over the years, and sort of going forward.
Yeah, well, they're looking forward to. I notice that you like all the batsmen. You like Ponting, Finch, and Warner, but you don't like any Aussie
Oh,
bowlers, and that's okay.
no,
You might.
I love Pat Cummins and Mitchell Starc. I mean, they're one of the. I mean, I really love watching them bowl, and really fond of them. Yeah.
Yeah, very true, very true. So, in summary, what are you bringing to the table? What are you bringing to the Renegades? What sort of form are you in? I know you've only had a very small taste, and you talked about just having a, you've been in lockdown, so now you've got to get out and do your thing. What are you going to bring for the Renegades? Where do you see yourself in the system? Where do you see yourself batting? And what are you hoping to achieve in your time down here for in the Big Bash?
Well, obviously, whenever you come to play a tournament, the first thing is you want to win the tournament, right? And that is the whole mindset. And this is what I want to bring to the table, that whatever we do, at the end of the day, it should all be towards a winning cause. And we put our best foot forward to do that. And that's what I like myself to do as well. I mean, play some aggressive cricket, make sure that it's all positive cricket. I'm bringing some positive energy in whatever role I play. And obviously, being a top order batsman, I open the innings, and I've had good few months in the recent past. We had a minor league tournament in US where I got the maximum runs, and I've been feeling good about my batting. It was good outing yesterday as well, where we played a practice match, got some runs as well. So really looking forward to playing here and with this group, and smashing some big runs, and trying to win some games for my team.
Yeah, well, let's hope so, especially up against the Melbourne Stars in the Victorian rivalry, the Melbourne rivalry. Unmut, appreciate your time. Welcome to Australia. Congratulations on your recent the marriage, and may this wonderful cricket journey, which has taken you all around the world, continue. You're a star, and let's hope that we see many more Indian cricketers come down to Australia to play in the Big Bash. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you so much. It was nice talking to you.
Purse on the right, there's not too many up alongside her. Here's a chance for Hatch. She's done it again. Ashley Hatch, 24 seconds on Saturday and less than 3.5 minutes here tonight in Newcastle. In towards Kerr. Kaya Simon, deflection in. Australia equalise. A big touch of good fortune about him. Akiah Simon will claim that one. And it's 1-1.
A 1-1 draw last night in Newcastle, Matildas and the USA. A good friend of the station and one of the hardest working freelancers going around is Daniel Garb. He's joining us. Hey, Garby, what I have noticed out of that commentary that I saw on the TV last night, wow, the noise.
Oh, the crowd's been unbelievable for the Matildas, Goss, over the last two games. I mean, okay, the USA are a glamour team, but these clashes weren't announced with much time for fans to prepare in terms of getting tickets and getting themselves organised, especially for a Tuesday night game. Saturday, it was raining heavily in Sydney. I mean, the numbers are superb. They broke the record for a Matildas game in Sydney on Saturday and then backed it up with a big crowd in Newcastle. The most impressive thing about it, Goss, for the Matildas is not only the crowd numbers, but I was at the game in Sydney. From about the 80th minute, the fans, you know, young girls, young lads, streamed down from their seats to the edge of the stand just for a glimpse of their heroes after the game. And they just couldn't wait to shake hands or get a photo or do whatever they could with the players. And they stay there for half an hour afterwards. The force of this team, the power of it, it's something to behold in Australian sport, leading into, of course, this home World Cup. They are a machine. These girls, massive role models for their fans.
Yes, wonderful to watch, and you're right. And I tell you what, they make it hard for themselves. They sleep at the wheel at the start of two games against the United States, but good to see them bounce back last night. They showed a bit of ticker in the 88th minute with Kaya Simon, as we heard that goal there.
Yeah, nice for them to get a goal, one they deserved on the balance of play over the two games. And the quality of the Matildas going forward is not a question on them at all. They're as good as anyone in the world in attack. But defensively, they have massive problems. We saw it in Sydney and again last night. The way in which they are opened up at times and present such easy opportunities to teams of such quality like the Americans, it's just not good enough right now as we build into, of course, 2023. And that is modus operandi for Tony Gustafsson to try and solve. I mean, he can't pluck players out of thin air to fill those positions. And in the absence of Polkinghorne and Kennedy, that problem was exposed even more. But structurally, tactically, he's got to sort things out or they just won't achieve and deliver on their potential. So that is a massive problem and the Americans exposed that yet again.
So where does he find the right mix? And you talk about structure, but you talk about, you know, Kennedy and Polkinghorne who have got the experience behind them. But where does he search to find the right balance, the right mix and then the right game plan?
It's hard to know. I mean, he needs to hopefully find a couple of players in the A-League women's season, which starts now. To be honest, I'm not sure he'll be able to find anyone of the required quality between now and the home World Cup. So I think he's still going to rely on at least one of Polkinghorne or Kennedy. And to be honest, their form wasn't great leading into this series when they were out as well. So it's a big problem. Where I'd like to see him rectify things, though, is in defensive midfield. So he played Emily Van Egmond again there last night. She's a wonderful player, Rolls Royce. I just don't rate her in that position. I don't think that is her best position. She doesn't defend naturally. We saw that at the last World Cup in 2019 as well. She needs to play further up the park. And you can find someone who can give the defence more protection in defensive midfield and give them that responsibility and make them their number one job to protect that back four. That can help slow down supply into opposition attacks. And then hopefully you give the defence a little bit more time to set themselves, basically. So, yeah, hopefully he can come up with something. But, it's an issue for him at the moment, that is for sure. And that's a big question mark around the team.
The Asian Cup is in January. So how important is that as a series for the team? But is it, again, we are talking about 2023 and the World Cup. So is this just part of that build?
The Asian Cup's still crucial for this group of players. I mean, they've won it before, but they'd love to go there and win it again. And if you want to be a team that can challenge for the World Cup, well, you need to be the best in your confederation. It won't be easy. Japan are an excellent side, as we know, and Korea too. So, yeah, that's certainly the main target for him now in the short term. But yes, the home World Cup is so important that it's about building the blocks for that big tournament. But another big trophy along the way would be fantastic.
Now, you made me grumpy yesterday, and even though I wasn't talking to you, but you still made me grumpy. I'm surely... you have some pull in the voting in the Ballon d'Or to get Sam Kerr over the line. She didn't just get. She didn't even just not win it. She didn't even finish silver. She's no disrespect to standing on the podium. It's a wonderful achievement. But come on, Garby, lift your game. Surely you could get onto your cohorts to sort of discuss this. Getting our girl Sam Kerr at least in the top two.
You can't blame me, Goss. I've got the undoubted privilege and honour of voting in the men's Ballon d'Or. I don't vote in the women's.
Oh, look at you go.
I don't vote in the women's. So I'm lucky enough to do so for the men, and we can talk about that. But I understand that Australia's vote did go to Sam Kerr in the women's. I'd be shocked if that wasn't the case. Look, to finish on the podium, I know that we pumped Sammy up and she is a superstar and amongst the best in the world. But firstly, there's a number of other great players. Yeah. Who did have stronger claims than her slightly. But to finish third, I don't think we realise how big of an achievement that is.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll have an Australian player in our lifetimes, Goss, certainly, finishing on the podium in the Ballon d'Or, men or women's, for as long as we're around. You know, it is just so hard to do. So she's a freak and we should celebrate that. But I tell you what, she's got a good chance in the next couple of years playing at Chelsea with the home World Cup to maybe clinch it before she's done. What a story that would be.
She's a remarkable story and she's going to leave a lasting legacy. And I think she's a lot of the reason, as you mentioned earlier, where the youngsters all come down to the fence line to get up close and personal. Yeah. And I've seen a lot of photos of her. She's much loved, isn't she, by the sporting community and not just the football community.
Oh, she transcends completely. I mean, she's a megastar. And she's doing a great job as a leader. I think the way in which she's matured in that role as captain and over there at Chelsea, which is at a very big club, has been great to see in recent years. I tell you what, there's another one to watch, though. Keep the name Mary Fowler on your lips.
Yeah,
she is going to be a megastar as well. I think that's the blueprint for the home World Cup. Fowler is the number 10, playing in behind Sammy Kerr. Mm. It builds everything around them to let them link up because she is something special too. She could hit Sammy Kerr levels, legitimately. She is just that good. So, yeah, that's the one to get excited about.
Yeah, love Mary Fowler. Now, as you do know, that the Portuguese community over in Western Australia have a connection to Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo, mm-hmm. because they've got family who live in the southern suburbs. I think his grandparents live over in WA. They're unhappy that you didn't get him over the line in the Ballon d'Or. they've just texted in on the temper text machine. All right, he didn't vote for Sam Kerr, but did he vote for Ronaldo or did he go down the Lionel Messi line? How did you go with your vote in the men's?
Yeah, I mean, Ronaldo didn't get in my top five, and he didn't make the top five overall. And he would have been seething seeing Lionel Messi win it because he cares about that enormously. Don't worry, as does Lionel, by the way. I voted for Robert Lewandowski, so he was my number one for this year's Ballon d'Or, and I thought he was unlucky not to win it. I had Messi at two. A lot of people are asking how Messi won it. He's had a terrible season. He hasn't. Yes, it's been a slow start at PSG, but he was still the Liga top scorer, so he's first half of the year was very strong. He led Argentina to the Copa America, was player of the tournament, still did some mesmerising, messy things throughout the season and had strong claims. Lewandowski was the man for me, considering how brilliant he was as European Golden Boot winner and broke records in the Bundesliga for goal scoring again. So I had him one, Messi two. Jorginho at three, I'm really happy with. That was my vote and he finished there. He was UEFA Men's Player of the Year, won the Euros and the Champions League, obviously, and was in the team of the tournament for both. So you've got to make the podium when that's the case. And I had N'Golo Kanté in there as well. He finished top five. And I had Mohamed Salah at fifth on my voting. He finished seventh overall, but he elevated himself to best player in the world status just before voting closed. First half of the year was a little bit slower from him, but I think he'll probably be the favourite going into next year.
No doubt. Now, I've got to get a quick word on you. I've read the article on Code Sport. Fantastic piece you've done with Jake Carlisle. One to get him to talk. It's a pretty frank and raw discussion. First and foremost, how did you get him to talk? Because he doesn't talk. And how's he going in retirement? It was a pretty bumpy road.
Well, I guess that was the main theme of the article, that Jake Carlisle doesn't speak because I guess the unforgiving and brutal world of the AFL has changed him a little bit. We know he had a couple of controversies, one not of his doing, with Essendon, of course, but that affected him. And he decided to basically become a bit of a recluse in that sense and not speak to the media ever when he played, in detail at least. But I've got to know Jake pretty well. I'm in the same fantasy footy league as him, so we've got some mutual friends. And when he came to London in that year that he was suspended because of the Bombers, supplement scandal. I got to meet him there through mutual friends, and we became mates, went to Wimbledon together, and have stayed in contact ever since. So he was happy to open up, which was great, and he does so in a raw manner. And yeah, the way in which he expands on how some of those situations affected him and how he changed his personality to survive, really, in the AFL system is quite interesting. And then the toll it takes on his body, Goss. I mean, we hear some of these stories over the journey, but it continues to blow me away just how much pain some of these guys go through to churn out a career. It's quite something. So he discusses that. And for Saints fans, he talks about how you can end your premiership drought, which will obviously be a big talking point now that the D's have ended theirs and the Saints are out there on their own by a long, long way. So that was quite interesting too.
It's an exciting time for sport because there's a lot of seasons about to start. But for me, we all go to the mountain. And it is one man who's got a double role on the weekend up there at Bathurst with the Erebus Motorsport entry, of course, Shaw and Partners, and a part of the Channel 7 broadcast team. And that's Jack Perkins. Hey, Jack, appreciate your time. You're going to be a busy man over the next 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, look, I'm really looking forward to it. Obviously, Bathurst is the biggest motor race in Australia, and it's well-renowned around the world. And, you know, for me, I'm quite experienced now. I think it's my 16th start this year as a co-driver. And, you know, when there's some opportunities to bring a little bit of expert analysis to the Channel 7 broadcast, I'll be, you know, helping provide some of that in as well, which is going to be a great insight for the viewers. But, you know, obviously my priority is racing for Erebus and doing my job as a co-driver with Will Brown, and I'm, you know, really excited about the race itself. It's, you know, for us, it's shaping up to be really, really good.
Yeah, it's Jack Perkins, our guest. So Jack, in regards to that role, so your 7 role, would that be sort of like the preview stuff, or when you're about to get in the car, will they have you mic'd up? I mean, can you just give out an insight into regards to your actual commentary role first and foremost with 7?
Yeah, so I won't be doing any sort of commentary in the race as such because it's with the world feed at that point in time and the commentators will be looking after it. So my role is sort of more around when I'm not in the car in the lead up. So, you know, the main drivers, there's 2 drivers in every entry, and the main drivers do the qualifying and the top 10 shootout. So during those times, my services as a driver aren't required. So I'll be able to offer some insights on the broadcast with Channel 7 alongside Mark Beretta and the rest of the team. And, you know, just looking forward to sort of sharing what I know about the place, the track, the event, what it's like to be a driver. And, you know, like come Sundown race day, my focus will be 110% on driving the race car and being a co-driver to Will Brown. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to that. And obviously it's such a great weekend in Australian motorsport. And, you know, we've had to push it back from its traditional October weekend to now the first weekend in December with all the COVID stuff. So, you know, for us, it's been a massive build-up and we're looking forward to getting stuck into it.
Yeah, growing up, and I'm in my mid-50s now, but I remember, you know, growing up and, of course, living in WA, we always got it sort of 3 hours earlier. So we were up very, very early for the start. It was the legends of the time, the Dick Johnson, Colin Bond, Alan Grice, your father, Larry Perkins, Peter Brock, all that crew. I still get incredibly excited about it. Has the mountain changed? Has the track changed? And does it change from year to year, Jack?
Well, it's an interesting question, actually. The track itself has been the same for, you know, many, many years. I mean, none of the corners or the profiles or anything have changed. The only thing that changes sort of every 10 or 15 years, they resurface it with a new layer of bitumen, but that just gives the drivers more grip and the lap times just go faster and faster. But, you know, I guess what's changed in recent years is probably more so, you know, last year we had the event without fans, so that was a really, really weird feeling to be here without fans because traditionally, we have, you know, nearly 100,000 campers around the mountain, on top of the mountain, in all the paddock areas, and it offers such a great vibe. It's a week-long event. It's family tradition for a lot of people, and, you know, so this year, we welcome back the fans. I think that's a really cool part of it, but, you know, the race itself, I mean, it's just getting faster and faster every year. I mean, there used to be around about a 7-hour race, and this year, it's looking like potentially breaking the 6-hour barrier because the drivers and the cars are just so much quicker now, and, you know, it's an exciting thought to be in it, but you've got to be on top of your game. And, you know, it's a massive team deal as well with all the pit stops and stuff. You know, back in the 70s, Peter Brock used to win by 6 laps at times. And now if you're 6 laps down off the leader, you'll be last. So, you know, you've got to be really on top of your game. And it's certainly more of a sprint race these days than an outright endurance race.
No doubt. We're chatting with, I say this out of respect, veteran co-driver Jack Perkins. I mean, you're not old, but you have driven in a lot of the events up there at the mountain. Of course, it is an absolute classic event, of course, the great race. But you are driving with a rookie in Will Brown. What does he bring to the table?
Yeah, it's a really exciting challenge for me this year. And as you say, I have been around a while. I did my first race in 2006 and I've had mixed results. I've had three top 10 finishes and I was lucky to get on the podium in 2019, finishing in third, which has been my best result. But this year, you know, I signed with the Erebus Motorsport team and, you know, they're a team that had won the race in 2017 with David Reynolds. And I knew that their cars and their equipment were going to be fast enough to win the race. And at the time, you know, not many people knew much about the rookie driver, Will Brown, but he's had a real breakout season this year, one of the most impressive rookie seasons in many years. He was able to win his first race only 3 weeks ago at Sydney Motorsport Park, and he's had multiple pole positions, and he's currently top 10 in the championship. So we haven't seen a rookie driver win his first race in the championship since Scott McLaughlin and Chas Mostert back in 2013, and those guys have gone on to be, you know, Scott McLaughlin's a three-time champion and Chas Mostert's a Bathurst winner. So I think Will's a star of the future and he's really cementing himself as the future of the sport. And it's just exciting to be around him. You know, I can lend my experience to him and try and get more out of him. And, you know, equally, I'm still at this age, still learning from him. These young kids are fearless and they drive bloody fast. So, you know, I'm still learning as well. And I'm looking forward to working with Will over the course of the weekend. We're on track Thursday for practice and then Friday's qualifying, which is Will's job, and hopefully he gets into the top 10 shootout for Saturday, and then it's race day Sunday. So it's a big week. It's a massive build-up, but, you know, I just love it. It's the greatest time to be a driver in Australia, and, you know, the fact that it's in December this year and there's kind of no other sporting codes happening at the same time, it sort of hopefully shines a bigger spotlight on it for us, and it's a great weekend for the industry.
Oh, it is, and you're right. There's a bit of sport starting. I think the basketball's about to start, and we've got Big Bash cricket on our doorstep in the Ashes, but it really is a weekend dominated by what takes place up at the mountain. Jamie Wincup's about to bow out. He's been a wonderful competitor. I know he got a presentation of the bonnet, which was given to him, which was a wonderful gesture from the group. What are we going to miss from Jamie Wincup? He's a fierce competitor. He's always been at the forefront of the sport in his time. He's been a dominant name in the sport. He's not going to be an easy pushover. He's going to try and go down swinging too over the weekend.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if I take off my Erebus hat and put on my Channel 7 hat, funnily enough, where I'm standing talking to you, Craig Lowndes just walked past me and given me a wave. But he's Jamie Wincup's co-driver. But if I look back at Jamie's career, I mean, we call him the GOAT. He's the greatest of all time. 7 championships, a couple of Bathurst wins in there. I think it was 4 in total, to be honest. And you know, he's going to leave a lasting legacy on the sport for many young kids to aspire towards. And, you know, I personally think he's retiring too early. He's still driving very, very well. He's second in the championship. But he's chosen to call time on his career in his own terms. And then he's going to become the team leader at 888 Red Bull Racing next season. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's going to be interesting. I don't think he likes the kind of fanfare about the last weekend and everything. He's a pretty low-key kind of guy, Jamie. But, you know, for him and Craig Lowndes to be driving together, it's certainly one of the fan favourites. I'm sure there'd be plenty of support out there for them to win, but I hope they finish second behind us, to be completely honest.
Jack Perkins, our guest, Erebus Motorsport entry, driving with Will Brown. You touched on it earlier, Jack. Just what wins it? I know it's probably, you know, a bit of luck. You've got to get the car has to be one set up perfectly and get through the weekend. But what are the turning points over such a long time in the car over the weekend and in particular on Sunday?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I mean, without a doubt, I think if you asked anyone in pit lane, you need a lot of luck on your side to win Bathurst. But quite often you make your own luck. And it's one of those things where, you know, you want to start the weekend in practice. You hope that the car's performing very well straight away. If it's fast and quite competitive straight away, that means you can start focusing on the race straight away, and you're already focused on being fast and being competitive. But if you roll the cars out of the transporter and the setup's not quite right and you're not quite competitive versus the opposition, then it makes for a longer weekend because you're busy trying to tune the car with the engineers and make it faster. But clearly, if you've got a fast car, it makes a massive difference. You know, we talk about strategy a lot. There's 7 pit stops during the course of the day for fuel and tyres and a compulsory brake rotor change. So you need to involve the team there so you can't have any mistakes in all the pit stops, and you need the machinery to last the distance, 161 laps, 1,000 kilometres. So the age-old saying that you'll hear the commentators say a lot is sort of buy a ticket to the end of the race. You know, you've got to stay out of trouble, make no mistakes. And if you can be there towards the end of the race and be in a good, strong position with a fast car, you're going to have a good result. But, you know, my dad won this event 6 times. He says to me that Bathurst is a really easy race to win. It's just even easier to lose. And he's right, because any small mistake and you can, you know, throw away the race. We've seen people crash out on the first lap of the race. We've seen engines fail. There's so much that can happen. So you've really got to, you know, bide your time, look after your machinery and make sure you're there at the end of the race.